But as she walked down the wide path, Rezia Warren Smith was saying to herself, "Why should I suffer?" She had left Septimus, who wasn't Septimus any longer, talking to himself, saying hard, cruel things, talking to a dead man. "No, I can't bear it any longer," she was saying, when the little girl ran into her, fell down, and began to cry. That was strangely comforting. She stood the little girl upright, brushed the dirt from her dress, and kissed her. But she had done nothing wrong herself. She had loved Septimus. She had been happy. She had had a beautiful home in Milan, and her sisters still lived there making hats. Why should she suffer? The little girl ran straight back to her nanny. Rezia saw the kind-looking man next to them give her his watch to look at to comfort her. But why should she suffer? Why hadn't she been left in Milan? Why? Through her tears, the wide path, the nanny, the man in grey, the pram, all rose and fell before her eyes. She must go back to Septimus, since it was almost time for them to go to Sir William Bradshaw. She must go back to him sitting there on the green chair under the tree, talking to himself, or to that dead man, Evans, whom she had only seen once for a moment in Milan. He had seemed a nice, quiet man, a great friend of Septimus's, and he had been killed in the war. But such things happen to everyone. Everyone has friends who were killed in the war. Everyone gives up something when they marry. She had given up her home. She had come to live here, in this awful city. But Septimus let himself think about horrible things, and she could too if she tried. He had got stranger and stranger. He said people were talking behind the bedroom walls. He saw things too. He had seen an old woman's head in the middle of a plant. He explained how evil people were, how he could see them inventing lies as they passed in the street. He knew all their thoughts, he said. He knew everything. He knew the meaning of the world, he said. Yet he could be happy when he chose. They had been to Hampton Court Palace on an open-top bus, and they were perfectly happy. He had talked and laughed and chatted, but suddenly he had said, "Now we will kill ourselves," when they were standing by the river. He had looked at the river with a look she had also seen in his eyes when a train went by. She felt he was going from her, and she caught him by the arm. When they got home, he could hardly walk. He lay on the sofa and made her hold his hand to prevent him from falling down. "Down," he cried, "into the fire." He saw faces laughing at him, calling him horrible names and hands pointing. He began to talk aloud, answering people, arguing, laughing, crying, getting very excited and making her write things down. It was all nonsense about death, about Miss Isabel Pole, who had taught him Shakespeare. She was near him now. She could see him gazing at the sky, whispering. Yet Dr. Holmes said there was nothing the matter with him. What had happened then? Why did he jump when she sat down next to him and point at her hand, looking terrified? Was it because she had taken off her wedding ring? "My hand has grown so thin," she said. "I have put the ring in my purse." He dropped her hand. Their marriage was over, he thought, with pain and relief. He was free. He was alone. He, Septimus, had been called to hear the truth. Voices above his head spoke to him. Red flowers grew through his body. He felt that he was lying on a rock in the middle of the sea.
"I leaned over the edge of the boat and fell down under the sea," he thought. "I have been dead, but now I am alive. But let me rest," he begged.
He was talking to himself again. It was awful, awful. And as a sleeper feels himself pulled to the shore of life when he wakes, so he felt himself pulled towards life. The sun became hotter. Cries sounded louder. He just had to open his eyes. But a weight was on them, a fear. He pushed. He looked. He saw Regent's Park in front of him. Sunlight fell at his feet. Trees waved. Birds flew round and round. Beauty was everywhere.
"It is time," said Retzia.
The word time cracked open. Words fell from his lips without him making them. He sang, and Evans answered from behind the tree. The dead were in Greece, Evans sang, among the flowers. They had been waiting there till the war was over. And now the dead, now Evans himself.
"No, don't come,"
Septimus cried out, for he could not look at the dead. But the branches parted. A man in grey was actually walking towards them. It was Evans. But there was no mud on him, no wounds. He was not changed.
"I must tell the whole world," Septimus cried, as the dead man in the grey suit came nearer, getting up from his chair.
"The time, Septimus,"
Retzia repeated, trying to make him sit down.
"What is the time?"
This man in the grey suit must have noticed them. He was looking at them.
"I will tell you the time," said Septimus, very slowly, very strangely.
As he sat smiling at the dead man in the grey suit, a clock struck 11:45.